Hello, 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 everybody. Welcome back to Better Than Bad. I'm your host, Jess, as always. And today I am joined by a very special guest. I am joined by Thomas. Hello.
Hello over there in your neck of the woods.
Yes, we have. We're going to different countries. We're bringing it all in. And today we're going to be discussing someone. I've been very excited to discuss this person because I think their career is really interesting. Do you want to tell everyone who we're going to be talking about today?
Yes, we are talking about Mr. Nicholas Coppola, aka Nicholas Cage.
Nicholas Cage, as you said, Nicholas Coppola, which I only recently found out that he was part of that family.
Yeah.
I think someone on TikTok or something was like, did you know he's a nepotism baby? And I was like, oh, I had no idea that he was part of that gang.
My favorite thing that the internet just realized is like, wait, people who are successful in Hollywood have connections? Perhaps familial ones?
As if that has never happened before.
Never happened before, no.
He is an Oscar-winning American actor, probably best known for his roles in Face Off and Leaving Las Vegas. I personally know him best from National Treasure and that one clip from the remake of The Wicker Man where he gets bees thrown on his face. But that's not what we're discussing today. Today we're going to be discussing his top-rated film on IMDb, which is Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. It has 8.4 stars on IMDb. And his lowest-rated film is a film called Jiu-Jitsu that has 2.9 stars. And is officially the lowest rated film that we have discussed on this podcast so far. This has a lower rating than Movie 43, which surprised me.
I mean,
when I saw that on paper, I was like, oh, interesting. I didn't think we could get worse than that one. But here we are. So we're going to start off by talking about Spider-Man in Spider-Verse. But I'm actually curious as to what was there a particular reason you wanted to discuss Nicolas Cage, or was it just you saw it on my list and were like, yeah, we'll just do that?
Well, I mean, it was partially like you said you had like a list of people, and then I was like, okay, these all sound interesting. What are the highest and lowest rated ones? And then of those, this one seemed the most interesting to me of the movies I wanted to necessarily watch and discuss. But I mean, Cage, it's like you kind of said, he has such an interesting career that runs such a massive gamut from like his start in like the 80s, where you got stuff like Moonstruck or Raising Arizona. That's the first thing I saw him in, Raising Arizona, the Coen Brothers movie, which he's phenomenal in. And then all the way through like the 90s, where he got his Oscar, but also became an action star. And then to the 2000s, where he became like a Disney blockbuster guy into his, you know, straight to what we in the States call Redbox movies. That are just like you can get for a dollar and stuff like that. He did a lot of those. And now he's on a bit more of an upswing, even though he's still doing some cash grabbier movies that he still does with the Redbox thing. But he's been on a bit more of an upswing, and I'm all for it. I like that Cage never seems, at least, like he's not delivering an interesting performance, if not necessarily a good one.
I feel like when you hire Nicolas Cage, you know you're getting Nicolas Cage. Like, he's going to be doing his Cage thing. And that's kind of what people love him for. I feel like he's kind of like, he's gone past this point of just being an actor, and he's like a fully, like, I always say that there are like actors and then there are like celebrities slash like they're something else entirely. It's like they're a bigger thing. And I feel like he's that. He's like bigger than just an actor at this point.
I mean, look, I have seen that firsthand. One of my favorite experiences ever was going to South by Southwest the year he was promoting Joe. And there was a conversation with Nicolas Cage panel that I went to. And it was the most fascinating thing where he's just going off about like, oh yeah, Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance was inspired by Kabuki Theater. And I do secret missions for the UN. And a lady tried to bite me because she thought she was a vampire. You know, average shit that happens all the time.
So with this first film, with Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, obviously this is an animated film. We haven't discussed many animated films on this podcast, but this one is particularly well loved. As I said, it's got 8.4 stars on IMDb, 97% on Rotten Tomatoes. It was released in 2018. Stars Nicolas Cage, obviously, Hayley Steinfeld, Shameik Moore, Jake Johnson, and a plethora of other people. And it won the Oscar for Best Animated Feature in 2019. I personally think it's brilliant. Had you seen this film before this? I assume you had.
Yes, in fact, I saw an early screening of this like a week before it came out, and I was like, everyone, you're not prepared for this. This is so amazing. This blows any like live action superhero movie out of the water. And I still think like now we're, you know, about 4 years out from this movie originally coming out, and I still think that. I honestly, like, this was the movie that kind of broke me of, like, I was a big MCU person, and this was the movie that made me realize, like, oh, I think I might be kind of done with that whole thing, because, like, this shows just what you can actually do with, like, these characters, especially in a form that weirdly isn't that utilized theatrically, besides, like, before this, there was, like, Lego Batman, and then a huge breath of time between that and, like, Mask of the Phantasm, like, the 90s Batman movie. That came out theatrically. There's like a lot of obviously straight to video animated superhero movies, but this is shows like if you give it a massive budget and a lot of like, you know, time and care, you can make something quite frankly that's like a masterpiece.
I completely agree. It's quite possibly one of, if not my favorite animated film that I've ever seen. I think it's so, so well done. The animation is just breathtaking in the, and I like the fact that they really honed in on that kind of comic book style because that's what it's based on. And you're right, it's so strange that this sort of animation style hasn't been utilized more with superhero movies, because with animation you can kind of do whatever you want, you're not limited to the realm of physics, so you can do whatever you want, like whatever you can imagine you can put that into the film. So it feels almost strange that they haven't things like, you know, MCU, DC, they haven't necessarily utilized that as much. I think I saw this for the first time like a few years back, and yeah, I've loved it ever since.
Yeah, and it's an amazing achievement, especially considering like when I heard this was announced, like Sony's doing an animated Spider-Man movie, I was like, okay, whatever. I mean, Sony, you know, very dicey. You either get your Raimi Spider-Mans or your, you know, Mark Webb Spider-Mans that they allowed a green light on their end, so it's like, let's see how this goes. This came out like a month or two after Venom came out and shit like that, so it's like, okay, let's see how this goes, and blew every expectation out of the water.
So impressed with it, because I'm not like, I enjoy all the Marvel films, but I'm not like a huge like superhero movie person, but there's something quite special about this film and the way that it I think it really gets to the heart of the characters really well, and then everything just sort of molds together into this perfect package. And I just think it's a really clever way of bringing that Spider-Man story onto screen as well, with having all of these different versions of Spider-Man coming into play. Obviously, we've had a similar thing with that with the most recent live action of Spider-Man, but yeah, this one was just really interesting to watch.
I don't know, but I mean, didn't you realize that like you were watching in that live action Spider-Man movie, Spider-Man you remember before, therefore it's so much better and you can forget about this movie because you remember Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield, therefore it's better. Remember? Nostalgia. Now you feel something for it, right? You don't need interesting characters who you hadn't seen before to be really well developed like in this movie. Screw that.
Just nostalgia fest. That film was definitely all about nostalgia. Oh, yeah.
That was the thing. I was so like, I'm in the minority where I was not a huge fan of No Way Home. And then I went back and watched this movie, Into the Spider-Verse. And I'm like, did anyone forget? They did this already. And it was way better.
Yeah, it was sort of just like, when they announced that they were doing the whole like multiverse thing with Marvel, I was like, well, we've kind of already seen that with Into the Spider-Verse. And I think it worked so well in the animated film that I was sort of like looking at the live action kind of going, okay, well, it missed the mark on certain things.
Well, especially when like what I love about this movie's multiverse storyline is that it's more just to service a great overall point about not just like the Spider-Man character in general, but how people feel and get invested in Spider-Man from even like, I'm not a huge comic book person, but I've known Spider-Man ever since I was a child. Everyone like knows Spider-Man and like Superman. And this is the best Spider-Man movie to me because it's so much more about like, well, anybody can be Spider-Man. You can be like a very weird off personality that's not quite Peter Parker that we usually know, but you can totally still be Spider-Man no matter what. And I think that's a beautiful thing to really send out into the world with this movie.
Yeah, and I think the through line with the characters, all of them, is really interesting, really well fleshed out, and it doesn't feel like you're being like piled on with information. But like particularly with Miles and Peter Parker, it's like you see the journey of their characters plays out in such a seamless way that sometimes I think in certain films, particularly like big flashy, usually, and that usually falls into like superhero movies, the big flashy ones, is sometimes you miss that through line with characters with this, and that may come down to the medium used, being able to do it with animation, but you see that through line go the whole way through the film, and it's really nice to see, and it's quite emotional at the end. I'm like, why do I feel like crying over Spider-Man film, but here I am. Because it's just like you feel connected to these characters.
Yeah, and even like with the gag characters, like in theory, you know, like Spider-Ham would just totally be like, he's just a gag character and he delivers plenty of funny lines and stuff, but you get that emotional investment still as you've seen him along with everybody on this journey. You get emotionally invested when he does something as silly as like, here's this hammer, it can fit in your pocket.
Yeah.
It's a stupid cartoon hammer. It's genuinely emotional despite the fact it's a dumb gag.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, that's really sweet. They got the balance perfect. Because I thought that with Nicolas Cage's character, Spider-Man Noir, I thought he had lots of really like funny lines that weren't like played for laughs, but just because of the context and also the way that Cage presented them as well were comical. This sort of very like old school Hollywood kind of vibe in this colorful modern world just fitted really well. And one of my favorite moments is him staring at the Rubik's cube being like, and this is purple. No, that's not purple, just trying to learn these colors. I just think it's really funny the way that they incorporated all these characters into this one lit like story.
And it's such a good voice performance from Cage, because he's playing on like a lot of old noir people like Humphrey Bogart or James Cagney with like the voice. And it's so funny to hear him even deliver lines like the bit where they're all crowding around Miles about just like, can you do this? And he's just like, can you hide all of your choices of beyond your moral ambiguity or whatever? Like, it's a really funny line, even though he's just delivering it very sincerely. It kind of reminds me of like the older spoof movies like Leslie Nielsen and stuff like that, where he's playing the lines 100% seriously, which makes you believe in the character, but also makes it so funny when he delivers them.
Yeah, one of my favorite lines was when he was like, wherever I go, the wind follows. I was just like...
And the wind smells like rain.
Yeah. It just like, and it is true. It's like he's playing it completely like to the point and straight, and he's not doing it for... Like, I suppose he is doing it for laughs, because when you read that script, you know that that's going to be funny, but he's playing it the way that obviously that character would be taking that very seriously and be like, no, this is how you have to do this. Right. And yeah, the scene with all of them where they're like basically beating up Miles and he's just like, can you do that? It's so funny to watch these, like, all these people who have this very similar experience just like going at each other to try and prove that this poor boy is able to do something.
Yeah, I think it really sells just even the pressure of being Spider-Man and all the insecurities you would have. Like, all these people have this mutual experience of, like, something horrible happened to me, I got bitten by a spider, and I have to, like, live with the responsibility of being Spider-Man. And I think they all have that mutual worry about it. And with this kid who's new to the experience, she's like, well, you have to toughen up like I did. You have to be going the exact same journey I did. But the beauty of the movie is that it's like, no, everyone has their own journey. Even when you're Spider-Man, you're not going to become Spider-Man in the exact same way everybody else did. Everybody is individual.
Yeah, it plays into that really well. And I feel like it sort of allows people to have, I imagine there would have been people watching that who felt very connected to Peter Parker, and then there'll be other people who felt very like connected to Miles Morales, and it's sort of like everyone had someone that they could kind of look at. And again, I think this is one of those rare films that really does, there are a lot of animated films that do this, but it appeals to both children and adults. But there's no kind of like, it's not dumbing it down for the kids, and it's also not trying to like hide in secret jokes for the adults either. It's just genuinely good.
It's a real family film in the sense that it is for an entire family, not just for kids or just for like adults who are like in on the jokes necessarily. It's just everybody can enjoy it.
Yeah. Were there any like particular standout scenes in this that you love?
Oh God, that's so hard to like narrow down. I think it's really just like, weirdly, despite this being an animated film, there are so many beautiful moments of characters just like sitting, talking with each other. Like, particularly the sequence later on when Miles is like stuck in his room at the school and his father comes to the door. Or even like when he's consulting his uncle after he finds out who he is as the Prowler and he's dying there in that alley. There's so many great, beautiful scenes that are just like two characters like hearing each other talk and just having like very subtle, beautiful facial expressions. And then at the same time can have like awesome freaking like Spider-Man swinging around sequences, like the whole one with Peter Parker after he's been like knocked out and Miles is carrying him around in New York and stuff like that. There's such a great mix of like very tender, intimate scenes and big, wacky sort of action beats that fit perfectly for a superhero movie. It's got everything.
It really has, like, and it's, and like you said, it goes from having those big like action sequences to then having those really quieter moments. And I think that helps with the emotional journey of it. It keeps you on your toes. Like one of my favorite scenes is that bit in the alleyway with his uncle, because it's so emotionally charged. And then not so long after that, you have that big ending action sequence with them in the collider and all of these things coming at them, like buses and everything coming towards them. For it to be able to go from one to the other and still, and not feel like jarring in any way, is just sort of, I think, a testament to how well made the film is.
Yeah, and also just a shout out to the best Stan Lee cameo, I would genuinely say. I think it's his, like, it's very funny, but it's also like weirdly so emotional. Like, this was the first one that came out after he passed. Mm. And I still remember the moment that like they see, they, you know, pan up to his face and he says, "I'm gonna miss him." Mm. It like shook me, because it's just like, oh my God, this is so like beautifully like sad in a way they never would have intended, obviously. Of just like this being one of the last cameos he did, but it says everything beautifully, where it's like he's trying to comfort this kid about like, you know, Spider-Man and I are friends and it's, you know, he really matters, but also he's totally cheating him out of money by selling him this really cheap suit. It's just like, it always fits, but there are no refunds. Yeah. That's like totally Stan Lee in one package.
Yeah. It's a really good little cameo. I'm glad that they had that in there. I did see a little trivia piece that apparently all of the animators really wanted to animate Stan Lee. So if you pause in any of the train scenes, he is on every single train. Mm-hmm. I have not gone through the film to pause and check if that is a true trivia fact. But if it is, then that's amazing. He's just there popping up in every single train.
Well, that's the thing. That's also the thing with this movie, is like it's so rewatchable, because there are so many times where like I've watched it several times since it came out originally in theaters, and I notice new details I'd never heard before, or jokes. Like just one factor that like in Miles's universe, the New York Police Department is actually PDNY as opposed to NYPD. Just one little detail. I'm like, I never noticed this before. That's so great. Like just one thing to show like the different universes, or just gags in the background you never noticed before. It's a movie that's like really worth digging into several times for all those little treats you find out.
Yeah, it's just like I could go back to this film again and again and again and enjoy it the same way every single time. Well, I mean, same way, but different. Like, so you notice different things. You see different moments. It's just so good. So good.
Hot take, good movie.
Yeah, literally that. It's a great movie, guys, and if you haven't seen it, you should be watching it.
I don't know if you've heard of Spider-Man. He's a pretty obscure character.
Yeah, just maybe you've never heard of him. We're bringing that to you. And yeah, like one of the bits that I always think about, like in terms of just beautiful animation, is when he jumps off the building, when Miles jumps off the building towards the end, when he finally feels like he can be Spider-Man. And it's just like, you know when you watch something and you just get like a bit of an adrenaline rush? Whenever I watch that scene, I'm like, it's probably a mixture of like the animation, the actual part of the plot, and then the music that they use. But you're like, it's like full adrenaline rush moment. I'm just like, yes, let's do this. I'm like,
particularly when they have that one shot of it almost like in slow motion of him falling, and it's just like him isolated in like the middle. It's like such a great shot. And another thing, just with animation in general, like this is such a unique style even for animation. around this, like with big studios, because so many times you get sort of like the Disney, Pixar, or DreamWorks or whatever, like that traditional style, Illumination with the Minions and stuff like that. This looks so distinct from any of the other animation companies that are out there.
And I guess to a certain extent, that would have been a big risk that they took as a studio to go, no, we're going to go with this very, you know, quite stylized option. It works really well. And I think obviously it fits in with that comic book realm because that's the style. But it would have been really easy for them to have just gone down the very typical animation route. I'm very glad that they didn't and they decided to go for something a bit different because I really think it elevates what is already a good film into this next realm.
And also it's just very sincere in a way that, like, not to harp back on the MCU stuff, but like what I think this has that so many MCU movies, especially as of late, have just like really dug into the ground is like that sort of wink and nod thing. Just like, isn't this silly? Like, this is really silly, right? This is dumb, wrong superhero outfits and just in this dumb audience. You know, you're not dorks. You're watching a comic book movie, but you're not dorks necessarily. This is a movie that's so incredibly sincere. It has plenty of jokes about Spider-Man, but it never feels like it's downplaying just like, isn't it dumb? Some guy in underoos freaking going around on webs. Isn't that silly? Like, it feels in the same way of like the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies. It feels completely sincere about what's going on. The jokes come from the characters as opposed to just like us downplaying this because we're a bit too cool and snarky.
Yeah, no, the MCU definitely feels like it's headed in that direction now where it's just like, I don't know whether that's like a mixture of all the sort of film buffs, like Scorsese being like, oh, they're like, what do you call them? Like theme park rides or something. But I don't know whether it's that, whether they're trying to sort of like one up that and be like, we know we're silly films, so we're going to say it directly to the camera.
It feels like it's been the evolution ever since, unfortunately, like a Joss Whedon took over Avengers. Like, ever since Avengers, I think they've been going steeply down that avenue of just like, wink in this dumb.
Yeah. And I think it is refreshing to see this film sort of, like you say, be very sincere with what it's doing and not be sort of very like, sort of shticky and like, oh yeah, look at us, we're being all silly. It's just, I think it makes for a more enjoyable watch because you're almost not being sort of like spoken down to, I guess, in a certain way. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like this, and that's probably what makes it so enjoyable for all ages as well, because you're not there watching it as an adult being like, okay, this is a stupid film. It's like, oh no, there is like a sincerity to it, which I think makes it easier for people to get really like involved in it narratively and want to know more about these characters.
Yes, exactly.
Were there any other like particular moments or things that you really wanted to discuss?
I mean, just the voice cast all around, not just Cage, but there's so many other people. Like, even we didn't mention many of the villains. Like, they have Schreiber as Kingpin, Catherine Hahn as this version of Doc Ock, and so many other people. Like, it is such a great example of, like, with the other animated movies, they tend to stunt cast with celebrities who are just like, it's me, say, Chris Pratt is Mario. Like, it's just, there's no, like, actual intention to the casting beyond, like, we have a name. Versus everybody here, despite, you know, many of them being very well-known people, like a John Mulaney as, like, the Spider-Pam. Like, he still fits perfectly as that character, despite being, like, a well-known person. And the same thing, like, Liev Schreiber or Jake Johnson as Peter B. Parker, or even Chris Pine as the Peter Parker who we are introduced to initially. I think is also, like, perfect. And I had no idea it was Chris Pine until, like, the credits. And he also sings the Spidey Bell song at the end, which is amazing.
No, it's like, because I think sometimes with animated films, when they do just try and get a name, can sometimes come across as a bit disrespectful to people who, particularly voice actors, who that is their sole career, because it is such a skill and not everybody has the skill set, because it's a completely different way of acting. And I think with this one, I think that casting came from, it seemed that there was a lot of care and attention put into who they were choosing and making sure that they were actually right for the role, and it wasn't just like you say, we're gonna get Nicolas Cage in and he's gonna be a big name and everyone's gonna be like, oh, Nicolas Cage is voicing this character in this film. He actually was right for the role. And the same with people like Hayley Steinfeld as well, I think, does really well in this, like, voices it really well. Yeah. And I think it showed an appreciation for the art form, the media choice that they used, you know. It showed an appreciation for animation and what voice actors actually do. Yeah, and I like that you mentioned Catherine Hahn, because I really love the Doc Ock in this version. I think it was so well done. That reveal.
Such a great reveal. Yeah.
Such a good reveal.
And I never anticipated, like, you see, like, a bit of her at the, like, the kids are watching that one video in class and stuff like that. I'm like, all right, whatever, Dr. Oct. Oh, of course. It's brilliant. It's great. And I love even the design with her tentacles, where they're, like, the weird kind of, like, clear plastic foam thing. It's just, like, that works perfectly.
Yeah, no, it was really clever, because you hear her name and you just don't think anything of it. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh. And I remember when I saw that for the first time, I was literally like in shock. I was like, oh my God, no way. And the whole Liv joke, and then Aunt May saying, oh, look, it's Liv. It's just like, there's so many.
Aunt May is freaking Lily Tomlin. Yes. Also another great casting choice.
Everyone was so well casted. It's like, beyond my, sometimes I do think, God, the budget that they must have had for their casting, because they literally got absolutely everybody. But the attention to detail, the care and thought put into their casting is just like, it's so amazing. And everyone was just brilliant. And like I said, like, voice acting is not easy to do. And they all pulled it off perfectly. Okay, so we're gonna move on to our next film, Jiu-Jitsu. As I said, it has 2.9 stars on IMDb, a 28% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. It was released in 2020. It is directed by Dimitri Logothetis, I want to say. I might have butchered that name. I'm sorry if I have. Stars Nicolas Cage, Frank Grillo, and Elaine Moussi. And yeah, was this the first time you watched this film?
Yes, this was definitely the first time. I had seen the trailer, and I was like, oh, this is a Nicolas Cage movie I don't want to immediately dive into, necessarily. But so yeah, this was the first time I'd seen it.
Yeah, I watched it for the first time this morning, actually. I got that up first thing in the morning, and that was how I started my day. maybe not the best way to start your day, but it's certainly how I started mine. Where to start with this film? Are there any, like, particular standout moments, I guess, that really, really stood out for you as a viewer?
Well, I mean, I'm just going to go right out and say it right here. All this information about not just being, like, the lowest rated Nick Cage movie, but also, like, the lowest rated of any movie ever covered for the show. I don't think this is that terrible. My brutal hot take. I think there are terrible bits and pieces to this movie. But at the same time, I have seen far worse Nick Cage movies. Like, the one that was very close to being this, that's like, I think, a 3.1 on IMDb. That was like right above this is Left Behind. And that is way worse. That is so much more boring and awful and dull and just like not Cage's best work at all, necessarily, as opposed to this. I think it's definitely, you can tell it's a straight to video bad, like, sci-fi action movie, but I have seen far worse.
Yeah, it's certainly not boring. This film isn't boring.
There are boring stretches, I'll say. I won't quite go that far, but I think it's because, weirdly, I think the biggest standout thing to me with this weird premise, like this plot that makes barely any sense about, like, a comet that comes every 6 years or whatever, like, that's all the boring stuff to me. The cool stuff is really, like, the action beats are much more fun than I expected them to be.
Because this is the thing, like, this is, like, very much a action martial arts film, like, that's what this is. And I've seen martial arts films be done really, really well. A film that I think does martial arts really well is, I don't know if you've ever seen it, The Raid.
I love The Raid and Raid 2. Yeah, for sure.
Amazing film, because it kind of has a very simple plot line and then has all these big action sequences that are done super well. And there were certainly elements of the action sequences in this film that were done really well. I think it was sort of like bogged down by this sort of slightly overcomplicated plot. Like you said, a comet comes every 6 years. There's this weird predator-like alien that comes and tries to has to fight them all. Otherwise, it's going to destroy the planet or something. And you're just there like...
And there have to be 9 specific people, and there's a chosen specific jujitsu master. Mm-hmm. And so the movie is about them trying to find all 9 people, and Nicolas Cage was the previous jujitsu master guy. And there's a point where he talks about like, oh yeah, everybody was killed and murdered. If you don't stop it, it'll kill everybody. It's like, but how are you alive? I don't get... What is... it definitely is like, it's so overconvoluted as a plot and weird. As opposed to like, The Raid does it so simply where it's just like, there's a drug lord inside a tower. A bunch of like special ops guys have to go in and, you know, fight their way up the tower to get to the main mob boss. Beautiful, simple, perfect, as opposed to, well, every 6 years the comet comes around and then this guy comes in like, well, we don't need all this shit.
I didn't need all this lore. I didn't need to know. Right. It's just like, my God, there's a portal that opens and it's just like, wait, what's going on? Like, I was watching within the first like few, like 5-10 minutes you're hearing about all this like portal stuff and I'm just like, okay. And you just kind of think, and then when you have all these action sequences, like I said, it kind of bogs it down and like takes away from some pretty good action sequences. Although I will say, as much as I did enjoy like the action sequences from just like being able to see these stuntmen just kind of really do their thing, it did distract me whenever they decided to do a slow motion moment. Which seemed to happen every single time someone was taken down. It was like slow motion takedown. I was like, okay, we get it. They're getting taken down. You have to do it for every single person.
Well, I mean, there's that, and there's also, like, I think the bigger thing, which is one of my favorite things in a bad action movie, where you have, like, a couple guys fighting who are your heroes, and then you have, like, all these villainous henchmen that are off to the side, and they all can't, like, only one henchman can come out at a time. Which is like, right, Bill goes out first, and then he fights and then gets hit, and it's like, all right, now Jeff, you go in. As opposed to like, no, everyone would crowd around like at least one of these dudes and try and stop him. As opposed to like, no, we have to have one guy at a time come up in a line.
It's just all these 30 guys just waiting for their turn. Yeah, let's,
right.
Let's just wait it out. No, you'd all like pounce on him at the same time. But yeah, the action sequences were fun to watch, and certainly kind of the best part of this film. And I do agree with you that I don't think this should be the lowest film that I've ever discussed on this podcast by any means. But
what would you say is the lowest one of the ones you've covered for the show?
Oh my God, it's movie 43. I can't even deal with that film. I really
that's the
can't.
Correct answer, knowing that was one of them. Like, yes, 100%.
I can't deal with that film at all. I've never seen anything worse than that. So when I saw that this was like 2.9 stars, I was like, oh my God, you'll make, I was like, I can't keep doing this podcast now. I can't keep doing this to myself. And then I watched it and I was like, huh, okay, that wasn't nearly as bad as I thought it would be. It's not a good movie by any stretch of the imagination, but it is certainly not warranting of being the worst thing I've ever discussed. Or even like, I don't even think it's worrying in 2.9 stars. I think that's very, very low.
Yeah, I would if I were to rate this line, I would be more like around like a 4.
Yeah,
I would say like there's enough of these action sequences to where like I didn't hate myself watching it necessarily. Like when I first heard this was going to be it, and I'd heard all the bad reviews, I'm like, oh my God, am I regretting this guest spot? And then like the moment the Tony Jaa sequence happens, which is very early in the movie, where it's like that one like POV. Sort of the way it's shot, like right behind him as like he's lining up and like going across like the various little parts of like this camp where everybody's at this military base and like just kicking people over and stuff like that. Tony Jaa, who's great from like the Ong Bak movies and stuff like that, great martial artist. Like the moment that sequence started, like the cinematography is very like sort of handheld and following him unbroken and stuff like that. I'm like, oh, this is fun. I don't know why everybody's like hating on this so much. Then plot happens. I'm like, okay, whatever. Oh, action beat. And then plot happens. And an action beat. Like, that's basically what it was.
Yeah, I could have just watched the action sequences and been quite content. But then they had to have the whole alien in there. And I was like, oh, guys, stop. Let's get back to the action bit. Although I will say that, like, POV section, my motion sickness could not. I was like, whoa. It's like when you play a video game for the first time, you sometimes have to change the settings so you're not like nauseous. And that sequence was fun. Although there is a moment in there, because I was looking at IMDb trivia, where you can see the crash mats that the people are landing on.
Yeah, that's the thing. But I almost look at it as a way of like, I'm a big theme park person and I love a good like stunt spectacular where it's like you can see when people like do these big stunt shows at a theme park and like them falling into crash pads or whatever. But just like I appreciate the skill that I'm seeing in one big take at the same time to where it's just like, sure, I see the crash pad, but it doesn't matter. Like I just like fell 4 feet. Yeah, that's pretty exactly. impressive.
That's the thing with all the stunt guys in this, that it's really impressive work from them. Like, you can't deny it. Like, the choreography is good.
Yeah, I will say, to be fair to the man of the hour, any of the non-action beats that I liked were 100% Nicolas Cage just getting to do whatever he wanted for the 3 days he was there. Which, that's, like, the big thing with all these, like, sort of, this is one of the many Redbox movies he's done, where it's like, give me $5 million, I'll be there for 3 days. And he makes the most out of that. Where it's just, like, it's, like, his introduction, where Elaine Moussie, like, falls into his, like, little trap, into, like, his cavern, and they have, like, the fight sequence where they're battling each other, and he's like, oh, you know, I keep myself busy, I have my hobbies, like I make newspaper hats and weird shit like that. Like, sure, Nick, of course, that feels like an ad lib of yours, let's go along with that. Like, he is consistently just weird and fun in this movie for the I guess like maybe 15 minutes he's on screen.
Yeah, because he's not in it a lot, but when I watched, when, like you said, with that first bit, I was like, Nicolas Cage came up with that on the spot. I really think that he sat there and went, can I make a newspaper hat and just add that in? Can we get a newspaper hat here? That whole introduction to his character was really fun. And he got his little fighting moment. But he is... there's a certain charm to him as an actor. And I thought it was quite, like, funny watching. He was, again, very funny in his role. And doing what Nicolas Cage does best, I think. You know, doing the Cage thing. And I agree that the moments that weren't action... the only time I enjoyed those moments were when it was Nicolas Cage.
And it also just a shout out to the editor trying so hard to make it look like Cage is with everybody in these scenes. Because like I said, this dude was here 3 days. So it's so much of just like him off with maybe one other cast member and then looking over, like talking to Frank Grillo, just like, hey, Frank Grillo. And he's like, hey, you over there, chill out. Anyway, let's keep talking about the plot here. Or my favorite is when they have that flashback to when the comet guy first comes, like the weird alien guy, and Nicolas Cage says, like, I saw it firsthand. And you see, like, everybody else is clearly in the movie for most of it. And then just shots of, like, Nicolas Cage's face in a completely different location, clearly.
Yeah, because that was when they were, there was another bit where they were walking somewhere, and it was just, you just saw the back of Nicolas Cage's head, and I was like, that is a body double if ever I have seen one. I said, that man was not on set that day. I know full well that he was not on set that day. There's no way.
Yeah, I mean, and also, he's the most obvious where, like, everyone else, like, Frank Grillo, Elaine Moussie, like, these guys have had action experience, and including Moussie has been, like, a stunt person previously. The most you can tell stunt double stuff is Cage, where, like, during, like, the big final fight sequence, where he's just like, oh, I'm doing my stance like I just landed, even though, like, a guy just did a flip who was not you. And it's very clear that was not you.
It's that, like, they do a flip, and then he looks up, and it's like, ah.
Right. It just moves his head, like, oh. Yeah, oh, I'm keeping my balance.
Such a classic little edit. And obviously not all actors can do a fucking backflip, but it was just like, you know, you just sit there and you go, oh, that was so obvious. Especially when you have someone like Elaine Moussie, who, like you said, has been a stunt person, so he's doing all this stuff, and you're like, well, no, he can actually do that.
But he learned all his moves from Cage. His father? Which, that twist, by the way, where it's like, after Cage is dead, just like, he was your father. what? Wait, what is this?
I'm really going for that Star Wars moment. They wanted that big reveal. He was your father. No, okay. What? Really? Okay.
Cut to that flashback footage of, like, a young man trying to be Nicolas Cage, like a little kid. It's like, whoa, I remember it all now.
It's just so random. Like, the whole plot is just so, like... weird. And it's like, from the start I was like, what is going on? You see him running through the jungle having these things thrown at him and then he hits his head, he forgets what's going on. I'm like, now the lead character's as confused as I am.
Like, the easiest way to do this would have just been to, like, steal the plot from the third Predator movie, Predators, where it's just, like, all these martial artists get kidnapped from different parts of the world, put on, like, one planet, they have to fight an alien guy, and it's like, who will survive? Like, that's all you needed.
Yeah, they really overcomplicated it. Something else that I thought was really, really bizarre choice was the way that they did the subtitles in this film, where they were like popping up like comic book kind of pop-ups.
Yeah, so we can facilitate all the great comedic relief from Eddie Steeples as the guy who can't translate things very well. Mm. Didn't you love that joke every time they went back to it? When it's so funny.
There was just a lot of strange choices and a lot of strange like acting choices. I don't know whether that was them though or the script. Sometimes you can't help a bad script sometimes.
Yeah, or even a cheaper production. Like what's her name? Maria Averpolis, who is the woman who was interrogating him at the base. She seemed very badly dubbed. Like, I don't know if she has like maybe a very thick accent and they were just awkwardly dubbing around it. But in the scenes where she's talking to like Elaine Moosey, like he's very clearly using on-set audio, and then she's just like, oh, well, you gotta talk to me, buddy. And it's just like, what? This voice does not connect at all.
Yeah, it was so strange because I've seen her in other things. Like, she was in The 100, that TV show. Having seen her in something before, I was like, it's not as if you're a bad actor by any means. But yeah, it was just lots of very like strange twists. Like the other one that was really strange was their little comic book transitions.
Like, oh, those are the worst. The worst looking comic book transitions ever.
Yeah. So what's going on? And it didn't make any sense for the plot either. We haven't set this up like it's a comic book film. So like why are we suddenly like having these weird little transitions?
Apparently it is based on like a self-published comic book from like the director and the writer, which is very bizarre. Especially like in contrast to the previous movie we talked about, which is like those comic book transitions are like so beautifully done versus here, where it's like, this is, did you get like your intern to draw these and animate these like transitions?
Such, I mean, the CGI is also awful in this, but that's probably a budget thing more than anything else. But I mean, it's quite interesting actually that they have these comic book transitions. I was like, well, this ties in very nicely with Spider-Man. A nice little connection there. It was just very strange. And like, they literally did rip off the alien from Predator because it was the same kind of, they like see through like infrared and they're like, crazy at killing people. And the way that they just like sort of kill the alien slash maybe not is by putting grenades in him.
Right, because when he gets sliced in those beautiful CG wounds that happen, they have just enough time to like put a grenade in his heart or whatever. And like, honestly, I don't mind the suit. I think the suit is actually pretty solid and like flexible, allows that the person in that suit to actually do some stunt stuff. But that fucking face that shows up in the clear plastic head, just like, what is this? What are you doing?
It was so weird. It just kept like randomly, like this mist behind the mask thing would disappear, and then you'd see this like weird face, and then it would go back. Just this blue man, just with red eyes, just like staring. I was just like, what is going on?
It looks like if you stuffed the Jamie Foxx Electro from Amazing Spider-Man 2 into a helmet that was a size too small. Yeah. So his face is just like smushed on the glass.
Again, a weird choice. There's just so many weird choices. But in like, if we bring it back to Cage, this is like one of those interesting things about him. And in terms of his like career trajectory, this man does not really stop working. Like when you look at his IMDb page, there isn't really any gaps. And he's like churning out films or projects. Like, I think he's got 111 acting credits, which is crazy. I know he's been acting for a long time, but that's a lot of projects, a lot of credits. And I feel like he just churns things out. And I just wonder whether this certainly must have been a cash grab. Like, okay, I'll just get some money. Like he said,
well, I know for a while it was because he infamously had like a huge amount of debt, because he would spend all his money on like castles and dinosaur bones, and he spent like $2 million to get the original Superman comic and stuff like that. Like, he spent his money very flagrantly, and so for years that was the joke about him, was like, oh, he's just doing another Redbox movie. But like, to be fair to him, unlike there's a lot of other people who do that, like say a John Cusack, and unlike John Cusack, Cage is really just like completely out of it, bored. Like in this movie, if you had John Cusack in this part, he would be like dead inside. He would not have anything to give you. Versus Cage is giving you something.
Like, he seems like he has fun.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen Nicolas Cage in something where he doesn't look like he's giving something. It may not be what people want, but he's always giving something.
One of the few examples, like I said, Left Behind. You're so thankful you dodged that bullet, because okay. That is like the most bored and sad I've ever seen Cage.
He just has like this sort of very strange career, and like as you said, he starts off really strong and he wins his Oscar. He does all these like pretty good films, and you know, films that have gone on to be quite like iconic, and then it just sort of falls off, and he becomes, I think he sort of became that kind of almost the butt of the joke, I guess. It was like, oh, Nicolas Cage. And it got to the point where I feel like he was doing so many bad films that people started to think that he was a bad actor. And when you look at his earlier stuff, it's clear that he's not a bad actor at all. And I'm glad that he's having a bit of a upward journey now with things. But it's definitely like a bizarre career to look at.
No, yeah, that's why I'm so fascinated by him. It's just because he has like so many massive extremes that you don't get out of people who've been working for as long as he has in movies. Mm. Like when you have like somebody who's so massively prolific as Cage, you get like such a wide variety of him. Like there are points where you get crazy Cage. There are points where you get kind of bored Cage. There's genuinely beautiful actor Cage. Like even within like the last several years, you've had like a Spider-Verse, but also like Pig. Or Mandy, or stuff like that, where you see like so many different versatile sides of him that are like either incredibly subtle and beautiful, and then also just wild and crazy and massive. Like he's this dude who has like such a true interesting range that most actors, quite frankly, wish they had.
Mm-hmm. But he's an interesting actor, and I've seen him in things where he's been absolutely brilliant, and the films have been brilliant, and then you see him in things where it's just him making newspaper hats, and that's okay too. That's fine.
And wearing a Rambo bandana for some reason for most of the movie. Yeah. Another thing that felt like his choice, just like, I want to wear a bandana.
Your impression of him's really good, by the way.
Oh, thank you so much.
It's like I feel like he did this film, like, obviously for the money, but I feel like he went in there, like, I'm just going to make myself look like the stereotypical action person. Because if I'm going to do this, I'm going to find something to enjoy out of it.
Well, because you can tell that, like, he said many times, like, he loves Bruce Lee and those older, like, 70s martial arts movies. And this feels totally like him trying to play the sort of sensei part. Where he's just like off in the corner, just like, I will teach you in all of the ways of jujitsu, which is never represented in the film, by the way. There's plenty of other martial arts, no jujitsu to be found in jujitsu whatsoever. But, you know, you get a guy like Cage for 3 days, and he's going to at least be like, okay, I'm going to try and sell your dumb script. Like, he's the guy who introduces a lot of, like, the dumb mythology about just like, every 6 years a comet comes by. And it's like, you know what? I'm wrapped in attention, Mr. Cage, even though I'm not going to retain any of this. But you saying it, I am wrapped in attention with it.
He does play that kind of like slightly wacky older man who has all this quote unquote wisdom to share quite well. And you are engaged with what he's saying. I personally, other than the action sequences, I do think he was probably the best part of this film.
For sure. Yeah. As he is with most of these like Redbox movies where he appears for 3 days and shooting.
I just love the idea of him just rocking up for 3 days being like, give me all my money. And then they're desperately trying to make it look like he was there for the whole shoot. It just really makes me laugh thinking about like these poor, like you said, these poor editors just like, why couldn't he be there for longer?
Why can't he be in a scene with at least like two other people? That would make this work? As opposed to just like, oh, you, whoever you can get from all 3 days, just have him next to me.
Are there any favorite films of his?
Oh, I mean, my favorite is still probably Raising Arizona. Like I mentioned, that was the first one I saw him in. But I also love Moonstruck, the David Lynch movie, Wild at Heart. Even in terms of like his big sort of 90s era action movies, it's all it's Face Off all the way. Him and Travolta in Face Off are like perfect together. Or, you know, in terms of the silly stuff, Vampire's Kiss, there's a lot. There's a huge smorgasbord of Cage movies I really dig.
Yeah, And like we said, because he's been in like practically everything, it's like, what's your favorite film? There's bound to be at least 10 that right. you enjoyed. Surely by statistic standard, there's bound to be one that you at least enjoyed. But yeah, he's just got such an interesting career. And I was so excited to like discuss that on here because when I was sort of thinking of people, because there are some people where for the most part, most of their career has been pretty good and there isn't a lot of really bad stuff. And I was like thinking about Nicolas Cage and I was like, oh god, he's got everything from the brilliant to the worst. So he is definitely a really interesting guy to discuss.
You know, I just want to shout out, like I mentioned before, but Frank Grillo is one of my favorite sort of like tough guy actors. Mm-hmm. Like he's been in like the Purge movies and he was the guy for a while who I wanted to play the Punisher because he kind of has that perfect sort of mystique to him. I think like he's always fun, is like always a reliable sort of action star character guy. And I think he, you know, he holds his own against, once again, like Tony Jaa and Alain Moussy. And whenever he can be in the eye line of the footage they shot for Nicolas Cage, he brings it.
Yeah. No, he's like, I completely agree. He's always very reliable as this like butch action man. he's really fun to watch.
Yeah, when I watched those Purge movies, the first thing I thought, like, oh, this guy would be the Punisher. Totally. I like Barenthal. You know, he's one of the few good things I like about those Netflix Marvel shows. But, I mean, it, like, Grillo is, like, totally made for, like, one of those characters. It's a shame that, like, the MCU wasted him on, like, what was it? The random guy in Winter Soldier who ends up blowing up later in Civil War. And so he has, like, a really bit part that nobody remembers.
It's a shame because he really could, like, especially as they're now bringing back things like Daredevil and whatnot and hopefully going a little bit gritty with it, they could have definitely used him in something. Yeah. But like you said, wasted, already dead in the MCU. I have to ask the question, even though we kind of seem to have answered it already, of which film did you prefer out of Jiu-Jitsu and Spider-Man?
Well, you know, after talking about Jiu-Jitsu, I think I can really say that, no, it's Spider-Verse all the way, of course.
Always. And for me as well, Spider-Verse was by far the superior film. It's only been once so far on this podcast that I have preferred the worst movie. So we're still going strong. I'm clearly got good taste, apparently. We're still good. Yeah. Were there any other little things you wanted to discuss before I wrap this up?
You know, Nick Cage was robbed for an Oscar nom for Pig. Cowards. Beautiful in Pig.
I haven't seen that yet. I should add.
Oh, he's so fucking good in that movie.
I've heard really good things about it. So I need to get on it. It's just one of those, you know, sometimes things just pass you by. But I need to get on that because I have heard that he's amazing in that.
And in such a movie where, like, the premise is, like, oh, a guy's pig gets stolen and he seeks revenge. You think, like, oh, is this going to be John Wick or whatever? And it's like, nope. It's a very sincere, sobering drama about a man who's lost everything.
Where can people find you on the socials?
Well, I'm at Not The Who's Tommy on Twitter and other places. You can also find my podcast at DEDB Pod, Double Edge Double Bill, which is similar to this show, really, because it's a show where my co-host Adam and I cover a good and a bad movie related to a double feature. Like, for example, a few years ago, we did a Nicolas Cage episode where the good film was Mandy and the bad film was Next, the movie where we can see 2 minutes into the future. Like, that's so Raven.
Thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate
you. Thank you for having
me.
It was lovely.
It's been really fun to discuss these films with you. And I just want to say thank you to everybody who has listened. Thank you, Thomas, for joining me today. And I hope you've all enjoyed it. And I'll see you next time on Better Than Bad. Make sure you join me next time on Better Than Bad, where I'll be joined by Vincent to discuss Steven Spielberg. We'll be discussing his highest rated film, Schindler's List, and his lowest rated film, 1941. Can you guess which one we'll prefer?